Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. And our first question, what happened to singer Al Green on this day back in 1974? Was it A, he won a Grammy Award for his song, Let's Stay Together? Was it B, he was sued for copyright infringement? Was it C, he was married in a hot air balloon? Or was it D, he received second-degree burns from hot grits that were thrown on him? Al Green, 1974, what happened? And question number two, it was on this very day back in 1998 that Aerosmith was sued for what? Was it A, copyright infringement for their hit song, Dream On? Was it B, insulting a ballet group by wearing tutus during their performance? Was it C, alleged hearing loss from a concert goer? Or was it D, lead singer Steven Tyler falling off the stage and onto a motorcycle, which he accidentally damaged at a motorcycle rally concert in South Dakota? 1998 lawsuit against the band Aerosmith. What was it for, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the 17th of October. Well, we have a couple of premieres in musical history today. It was, for example, on this very day, back in 1957, that the film Jailhouse Rock, starring Elvis Presley, premiered in Memphis. Elvis film premiere today, 1957. And it was just 10 years after that film release today, 1967, that the musical Hair premiered at New York's Public Theater. The show ran for 1,758 performances. Hair today, gone tomorrow. And that premiere was 1967. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, What is Solfège and Why is it Useful? This is written by Katie Vickers in ClassicFM.com, September 26, 2025. And what's Julie Andrews and a female deer got to do with it? Give me a name I call myself, a potted history of solfège. If you asked a cross-section of the UK population whether they knew solfège, the vast majority of them would say no. But start singing the words, doe, a deer, a female deer, and it's a safe bet that many of them would be able to join in with the whole song. It turns out all those people do know how to use solfège to sing the notes of the major scale. In the beloved 1965 film, The Sound of Music, based on the 1959 Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, Julie Andrews' character, Maria, uses the song to teach solfège to the Von Trapp children. Handily, there are seven siblings and seven notes in the scale, so she begins by allocating a note with its corresponding syllable to each of them, and before long she has them singing in perfect harmony. The roots of solfège reach back to the early 11th century, when the Italian monk and music theorist Guido d'Arezzo came up with a way of naming notes. What Maria teaches her young charges, though, is a movable do solfège. In this system, the tonic or key note is always called do. The second step of the scale is re. The third step is mi, and so on, no matter what the piece key is in. The system was developed by Sarah Anna Glover in Norwich in the early 1800s to teach singing to her Sunday school pupils. So what's so great about solfège? Well, the great advantage of movable do solfège is that it helps you understand what each note's job is, its position within the scale, its relationship to the notes around it, and its role in the harmony. You'll soon learn to recognize the patterns of notes that make up the most frequently used intervals, chords, and chord progressions. And there's no need to remember a key signature, regardless of whether you're learning a piece in G major with one sharp or D flat major with five flats. Do is always the tonic or key note. La is always the sixth note of the scale. And you'll know a jump in the melody from do up to la, a major sixth, should sound. Learning solfège can help develop many musical skills, including singing in tune, playing by ear, sight reading, improvising harmonies, and memorizing music. And it makes it very easy to transpose a piece into a different key. If the original is too high for your voice, just move do to a lower pitch, and vice versa. Composer and choral specialist Olivia Sparkhall is an advocate of solfège for teaching children in a fun and structured way. I wish it was taught in every school in the country. It really helps develop musicianship and makes every child feel that they are a musician. It teaches you about the building blocks and structure of Western music. The article skips down, ends with this. If you'd like to have a go at learning solfège yourself, you could start with one of the many videos on YouTube. Who knows how far it will take you? As Julie Andrews tunefully taught us, when you know the notes to sing, you can sing most anything. Louis Armstrong's Hesitating Blues introduces our jazz and blues music news. It's titled, From the Middle Ages to Miles Davis, 10 Best Trumpeters Ever. AI Overview, downloaded on the 13th of October, 2025. Creating a list of the quote-unquote best trumpet players is inherently subjective, but a widely respected list would include influential figures from both the classical and jazz worlds, due to the instrument's evolution and the varied nature of the musical styles, a quote-unquote best list is usually based on a player's innovation, virtuosity, and overall impact. The time frame from the Middle Ages to the modern era is vast, and the role of the trumpet changed dramatically over the centuries. Acknowledging this, here is a list, in chronological order, of 10 of the most significant trumpet players in history. Starting at number 1 with Achaeus, ancient Greece. While a trumpeter of the Middle Ages is impossible to name with certainty, due to the lack of recordings and surviving names, one of the earliest named players is from ancient Greece. Achaeus was a famed Olympic trumpeter who won the competition 3 times in the 4th century BCE. The medieval period did have players, often heralds for royalty, but they were generally unnamed. Coming in at number 2, John Blank, early 1500s, a trumpeter at the court of Henry VII and Henry VIII in Tudor England. As one of the earliest named black people in Britain, his image and story show the long, diverse history of musicians who played the trumpet like instruments of the era. And then at number 3, Jean-Baptiste Arban, a legendary French virtuoso of the cornet, a close relative of the trumpet. He is responsible for writing Arban's Complete Conservatory Method of Trumpet, a technique book still used by brass players worldwide. He brought brilliant new technique to the instrument, influenced by violinists like Paganini. And number 4, Louis Armstrong, 1901 to 1971, playing in the background now. One of the most important figures in all of jazz history, and arguably the most influential jazz trumpeter of all time. He was a master of improvisation, and his virtuosic swinging style revolutionized the role of the soloist in jazz. And at number 5, we have Bix Beiderbecke, an early jazz cornetist. His sophisticated harmonic ideas heavily influenced later musicians. Number 6, Dizzy Gillespie, a founding father of bebop. Gillespie was a fiery and technically dazzling trumpeter. His complex harmonic and rhythmic ideas, along with his high note virtuosity, defined the bebop style. Number 7, Miles Davis, a relentless innovator who was at the forefront of nearly every major development in jazz for 4 decades, from his early bebop years to pioneering cool jazz, modal jazz, and jazz fusion. Davis's musical vision and instantly recognizable tone changed the sound of the trumpet and the music. Number 8, Clifford Brown. Despite a tragically short career, Brownie was a trumpet prodigy, celebrated for his gorgeous tone, flawless technique, and lyrical melodic improvisations. His playing became a benchmark for future generations of trumpet players. Number 9, Maurice André, a French trumpeter who almost single-handedly revived the popularity of the trumpet as a solo classical instrument. He experimented its repertoire and showcased its technical possibilities with his brilliant clear tone and phenomenal breath control. And last but not least, number 10, Wynton Marsalis. A multi-Grammy Award winner, Marsalis is a rare virtuoso, equally celebrated both the classical and jazz traditions. He is also a prominent educator and advocate for jazz, and his impeccable technique and wide-ranging musicality have made him a towering figure in the modern era. And in Music Research and Technology, we have this article titled, The Recession Pop Revival, Why Feel-Good Anthems Are the Soundtrack of 2025. This is written in artisttrack.com, August 2025. When the world feels heavy, the dance floor calls. That's why recession pop, a genre of upbeat, escapist, and often nostalgic pop music, is surging back in 2025. Fans are streaming energetic tracks in record numbers, searching for joy, color, and release. And while the term may have been born during economic downturns, the resurgence shows up something deeper. People crave happiness in uncertain times. So why does recession pop resonate? Number one, escapism through sound. Danceable hooks and euphonic beats offer a break from daily stress. Number two, nostalgia as comfort. Throwbacks to past hits by artists like Lady Gaga, Keisha, and Rihanna bring back simpler times energy. Number three, TikTok and youth culture. Viral trends favor bold, upbeat pop, giving the genre a second wind. What are the lessons for today's artists, then? Number one, uplift through music. Lean into major keys, anthemic choruses, and relatable but hopeful lyrics. Number two, visual aesthetics matter. Pair your music with vibrant visuals, thrift-inspired styling, and bold artwork that screams joy. And number three, tap into community. Recession pop isn't just about sound. It's about collective release. Invite your fans into your world with dance challenges, interactive live streams, or shared playlists. The takeaway? Recession pop is a reminder that when times get tough, the world doesn't just want music, it wants joy. For independent musicians, this is a golden opportunity. Craft songs that radiate hope, fun, and energy, and you may just create the anthem people need right now. This is followed up with another article titled, Is Old Music Killing New Music? Old sounds now represent 70% of the U.S. music market. Even worse, the new music market is actually shrinking. This comes from an article in The Atlantic, January 23, 2022. Old songs now represent 70% of the U.S. music market, according to a music analytics firm. Those who make a living from new music, especially that endangered species known as the working musician, should look at these figures with fear and trembling. But the news gets worse. The new music market is actually shrinking. All the growth in the market is coming from old songs. The 200 most popular new tracks now regularly account for less than 5% of total streams. That rate was twice as high just 3 years ago. The mix of songs actually purchased by consumers is even more tilted towards older music. The current list of most downloadable tracks on iTunes is filled with the names of bands from the previous century, such as Creedence Clearwater Revival and The Police.
If I listen long enough to you, I'd find a way to believe that it's all true. Knowing that you lied straight-faced while I cried, still I look to find a reason to believe.
Rod Stewart's Reason to Believe introduces our rock and pop music news. Rod Stewart, 80, says he's done it all, but teases there's more to come. This is written by Stacy Carey in Parade Magazine, published in the News and Observer on the 12th of October, 2025. A 70s rocker who's still making hearts flutter at the age of 80 feels he's achieved everything he hoped he would. "Do You Think I'm Sexy" singer Rod Stewart is still performing and making new albums, but he told People he doesn't have a bucket list of things he still wants to accomplish in his life. "I've done it all," Stewart told People. He was asked if he might ever perform at a World Cup or Super Bowl, and he revealed neither is of interest to him. "I've done Glastonbury, so I'm happy," he said. Stewart mentioned he's supposed to be doing a country album and added he's halfway through an original album. He also has a return to a Las Vegas residency coming in May 2026 when he's headed back to Caesar's Palace from his March to June stay of this year. "I still enjoy what I'm doing. I love it," Stewart said of continuing to perform. However, Stewart noted, "but all things have to come to an end." That seemingly wasn't a hint at a pending retirement, though. He said he's very happy with my achievements thus far, indicating there's more to come yet. In addition to returning to Las Vegas in 2016, after that, the Maggie May singer heads to Spain and Italy for a couple of additional scheduled shows. Fans are thrilled that Stewart is so happy and still successfully touring. One fan on Reddit suggested, "That must be such an awesome feeling. I wish everyone felt like that when they are old." Someone else noted that Stewart should still keep a bucket list. "Do not put that out to the universe, Rod Stewart. As I told my aging father-in-law, you've got to keep one item on your bucket list at all times." Someone like you makes it easy to give. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what happened to singer Al Green on this day back in 1974? Was it A, he won a Grammy Award for his song, Let's Stay Together? Was it B, he was sued for copyright infringement? Was it C, he was married in a hot air balloon? Or was it D, he received second-degree burns from hot grits that were thrown on him? And the correct answer is answer D, hot grits. A Wikipedia article notes that on October 18, 1974, Green's girlfriend, Mary Woodson, assaulted him and then died by suicide at his Memphis home. Although unbeknownst to Green, she was already married with three children. Woodson became upset when Green refused to marry her. She doused him with a pot of boiling grits as he was preparing for bed in the bathroom, causing second-degree burns on his back, stomach, and arms, which required skin grafts. Shortly after, Woodson fatally shot herself with his .38 handgun. Police found an apparent suicide note inside Woodson's purse that declared her intentions and her reasons. A few days prior, Green had sent Woodson to convalesce at the home of a friend after she had twice attempted suicide. Green cited this incident as a wake-up call to change his life. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day back in 1998 that Aerosmith was sued for what? Was it A, a copyright infringement for their hit song Dream On? Was it B, insulting a ballet group by wearing tutus during their performance? Was it C, alleged hearing loss from a concert goer? Or was it D, lead singer Steven Tyler falling off the stage and onto a motorcycle, which he accidentally damaged at a motorcycle rally concert in South Dakota? Correct answer Answer C. As noted in OnThisDay.com, it was today, back in 1998, that Mark Nieto filed a lawsuit against Aerosmith for alleged hearing loss after he attended an Aerosmith concert. An AI overview notes that a settlement was reached. The lawsuit claimed permanent hearing damage due to the loud volume at the concert, and also named the sound technicians and the concert venue as defendants. A Walnut Creek man, along with an unidentified sound technician and the concert promoter, sued the band Aerosmith. The plaintiff claimed he suffered permanent hearing loss from the excessive volume at a concert. The Concord Pavilion stated that the artist, not the venue, were primarily responsible for the sound setup. While the details of the settlement are not extensively covered in these results, the case did result in a resolution for the fan. And by the way, another AI overview reports that Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, in fact, did fall off the stage during a concert on August the 5th, 2009, at the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally in South Dakota. He suffered injuries, including a broken shoulder and head trauma, and the incident led to the cancellation of the rest of the band's tour. So let's close out today's program with Steven Tyler's probable response to the fan with a hearing loss lawsuit. Here's Aerosmith's Dream On. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time. Sing for the year, sing for the